Thanksgiving, maybe? That's one thing we look forward to every year, all the good food. Not sure about the people who are doing all the cooking, how much they look forward to it, but they look forward to the eating of it as well. And most of the people that I've seen really don't mind because you wait all year for a feast like this, for a Thanksgiving feast. So it gives us something to look forward to. But I'd like to think about anticipation in another way, too, not just of the Thanksgiving feast that we have, but also anticipating the things that the Lord's going to do for you. So I'd like to think about it that way. And so I'd like to put that in the context of faith. Faith is the definition Holloway gave to us just a little while ago, the substance of things hoped for and the evidence of things not seen. But I'd like to draw a distinction here between knowledge and faith. There are some things that we know intellectually, and it's a little tougher to actually build on that to the point of having faith. So I'd like to give you an example. As Russ would say, you get this for free. So we'll give you a science lesson here for free. One of them is called the law of the pendulum, which means if you've got a pendulum and you draw it back and you let it go and it swings out and then it swings back, it's never going to swing back farther than what you dropped it from. That's different if you give it a fling, but if you just pull it back and let it go, it's never going to come back any farther. Each swing, it's going to come back a little shorter than it did before as forces start to operate on that. So it's one thing to know that intellectually, but it's another thing to actually put that to the test. So I'd like to show you an example of it and let you see if you would have enough faith in that scientific principle to actually put it to the test. So just keep an eye. You see what he's doing? He's got a bowling ball on a string. He's got it right up to his chin. Okay. It takes a lot of guts and a lot of faith in what it is you just taught. One word of advice, though, don't lean forward whenever you do that, because it is going to come back. He didn't have any faith. All right. But the teacher gave him another try. Hopefully they had 911 standing by on somebody with their phone there. All right. But he had faith the second time. All right. So sometimes, you know, we'll talk about trusting God, and we'll talk about it intellectually. We know God's going to take care of us, and he's going to make sure that we've got food to eat and clothes to wear and shelter and everything. But it's a little tougher sometimes when you actually put that to the test. And whenever you say, okay, well, now I don't know where my next meal is coming from. I'm going to have to trust in God to see if he's going to do what he says he's going to do. So we'd like to talk a little bit this morning about some people of faith. And that verse that was read is the beginning of the chapter that we call the faith chapter, Hebrews 11. It gives a whole list of people that are people of faith. Now, some of them were a little surprising. Some of them aren't. Some are the big names. You know, in the movie of the Bible, these are the stars. You know, these are the parts that everybody wants to play because they're the big ones. But the first two names on that list were a little surprising. That was Abel and Enoch. So, Abel and Enoch, all together, they take up about 10 verses. So, if you're looking at the script and you're saying, okay, now which is the part I want to play? If you look at that, it's like, well, okay, these are some pretty minor parts. Whenever you look at the quantity of scripture devoted to them. But those were the ones that Paul started off in that hall of faith, if you want, that he talked about. So what did Abel do? I mean, you know, not to be disrespectful, but he didn't really do a whole lot in our eyes to start off this list. Maybe it was just chronological. But still, he started off this list. And, I mean, all he did was he made one sacrifice and then he got beat to death by his brother. You know, that's it. So what qualified him to lead off this hall of faith, if you will? Enoch didn't get a whole lot more treatment. It says he walked with God and then he was no more because God took him away. Okay, what qualified him to be a part of that? So, you know, in contrast, you know, Noah, he gets chapter after chapter written about him. You know, he got four chapters. Abraham got 14 chapters there in the book of Genesis. Moses got four whole books. You know, so they were pretty important characters. But these first two, you just wonder, why did Paul pick those two? So I think the reason why is because, to our eyes at least, we don't know much about them because we're not told a whole lot about them, which makes them just ordinary people. They were ordinary people that in some ways apparently did some extraordinary things in that they just lived lives of faith. We don't see any huge great deeds that they did, but they lived a life of faith. And that's what we're called to do today. So I think that was what made them distinctive, was just they focused their lives on pleasing God. And so that was their claim to fame. So, you know, consider that. Could you head that list today? Do you live a life of faith on there, even if you haven't done any extraordinary things, if you haven't parted the Red Sea or anything like that, or spent 100 years building a boat to rescue every animal in the world, you've still done some important things. So, why was Abel's sacrifice acceptable to God? It wasn't a big, impressive sacrifice. It was just that he did what God said. He gave the first of his flock. So he offered that because that's what God had asked for. Now, we are not given the details about what was wrong with Esau's sacrifice, but apparently he didn't do that. Maybe he sacrificed an animal that was weak or sick or one that he didn't really mind getting rid of anyway, but his sacrifice wasn't pleasing. So that was why he got mad at his brother on there. So once again, Enoch hadn't done anything in particular exciting, but he had lived a life of faith. And so God chose him as one of the very few people that we read about that he took directly to heaven instead of actually having them die here on this earth. So there's a little more to faith, though, than just living a life dedicated to God. I want to give you an example as we're talking about faith. Do you remember whenever the movie Mulan came out? There was a very popular little character in there called Mushu. So, and you know, that was something that it was a very popular Christmas gift. And so, you know, one of our kids got a Mushu that year that it came out. But it was under the tree. And every time you jostle the packages under the tree, it would say, "I am Mushu." So there was not a lot of doubt about what was in that package on there. You know, the kids were sure of it. They hadn't actually seen it. There was still some anticipation. But they were pretty sure what was in that package. On there, it kind of narrowed it down. So even though the unwrapping of the presents was still days away, there was some anticipation there. And there was, you could call it faith, I guess. It's the substance of things hoped for and the evidence of things not seen. They hadn't seen it yet, but they had both knowledge and faith of what was in there. So faith is anticipating what God is going to do for us, and that he's going to reward us whenever we do the things that we should do. There was a story that I read about a grandmother reading to her 3-year-old granddaughter from the Bible. Excuse me. And so after a while, she noticed that the girl got really quiet. So she said, "Well, what do you think of what I read so far?" And the child says, "I love it. You never know what God is going to do next." So that's the way our lives can be sometimes. It's living in anticipation of what God is going to do next. Sometimes it's surprising, and often it's not something that we would have chosen. And so sometimes life is a surprise. You know, there's a commercial that says life comes at you fast. And sometimes that happens. It's not anything, you know, miraculous all the time. And faith isn't just like a magic pill that you take that means that nothing bad's ever going to happen to you, that you're not going to have any problems, there's not going to be any struggles, any difficulties, or anything like that. You know, Abel, as we said, was the first person in that list of faith. He made a sacrifice and he got killed by his brother. You know, that's not usually what we would expect to be the benefit of having faith. You know, okay, I do what I'm supposed to do and I get killed for it. But he still got a reward. There was still a benefit to his faith that he had, even though it's not what we would consider to be a good outcome. So sometimes the rewards for our faith are not the kind of rewards we would expect for there. So Hebrews 11 continues and talks about a lot of other people of faith on here. He says, "What more shall I say? I don't have time to tell you about Gideon, Barak, Samson, Jephthah, David, Samuel, and the prophets who through faith conquered kingdoms, administered justice, and gained what was promised, who shut the mouths of lions, quenched the fury of the flames, and escaped the edge of the sword, whose weakness was turned to strength, and who became powerful in battle and routed foreign armies. Women received back their dead, raised to life again." I mean, this sounds great, doesn't it? That's the kind of life of faith that you want to read. But if you continue on, it says, "Others were tortured and refused to be released so that they might gain a better resurrection. Some faced jeers and flogging, while still others were chained and put in prison. They were stoned, they were sawed in two, they were put to death by the sword. They went about in sheepskins and goatskins, destitute, persecuted, and mistreated. The world was not worthy of them. They wandered in deserts and mountains and in caves and holes in the ground." You know, faith isn't exactly sometimes the way we would picture it. And sometimes it's not the way that we want our reward to exist. It's hard for us to think about these things that happened to these people of faith here in terms of this being a reward for their faith. It's not what we consider to be a reward, but they're being persecuted for God. And so if we can be happy during our persecution, then that's the ultimate sign of our faith. That's the difference between that knowledge of faith and the actual experience of faith that we have, is being able to maintain that faith even in spite of the physical things that happen to us in this life. So we're not all going to be rewarded for our faith with a mansion or with a nice car and have the adoration of people around us and the respect of people around us. John 16:3, Jesus said, "In this life you will have trouble." So you don't become a Christian in order to escape trouble. That's not the way that it works. So as a Christian, we're going to have some difficulties. That's just the way it is. But the Christian life can be one of excitement. It can be one of danger, but it's one where we can make a difference in the world. And sometimes you might want to make a difference by doing big things, but sometimes you can make a difference just by doing little things, and the things that we do all the time. So even if, you know, maybe you don't do the things that get a lot of attention, you know, keep in mind this is the kind of attention that sometimes you get when you do big things. Sometimes we can be happy with just doing what God told us to do. And that's what we've been trying to impress upon you this whole year through our CERT program. We've been trying to get you to live a life of faith. And it may not be like Noah or Abraham or Moses. It might be a life of faith that is like Abel or Enoch. One where you don't get a lot of press, where you don't get a lot of attention, but that you're living a simple life of faith. And part of that life of faith is being able to carry the gospel to the people that need it. And so that's what we've been doing in the CERT program, is trying to teach you how to take the gospel to other people. So we've had classes on Sunday morning about how to approach people, how to present the gospel. We've talked about different things that people are going to bring up, things that they don't understand, some stumbling blocks that they've got to becoming a Christian. Right now what we're going through is taking it to people that aren't really believers in the Bible, how you can convince them that the Bible is true and that they can rely on it. But we're nearing the end of these, and if you haven't already started, it's time to put all that into action. And it's time to live that life of faith and eagerly anticipate what God is going to bring you as a result. It's not always the reward that we would seek, but if you're willing, he's going to give you some opportunities. He's going to give you some chances to use that knowledge that you've been gaining through this year, through the sermons that Russ has prepared and the Bible classes that he and I have been teaching. It's time to go out. You finished basic training, so it's time to go out and fight the war. So we're going to take the war to the enemy's turf, and it's time to step out into the world, to look around at your family and friends, and to say, who's having a spiritual emergency? Who is it that needs to have faith? Who is it that we need to take the gospel to? So take a look at them. You may have that long-lost sister, that uncle, that you just know is not in a saved condition. It may be your own mother and father. It may be the coworker that always has a struggle and that you think, you know, if only they were a Christian, they might have some comfort and some guidance that they need, that there might be some strength that Jesus would provide to them. And you're the person that can take it to. You may be the only Christian that they come in daily contact with. And so you may be their lifeline. You may be the one that spiritually dials 911 and gets them the support that they need. And you may can start that by yourself. It may get to where it's too much for you, and you may have to call in some reinforcements, and that's okay. You can do that if you need to. But it's time to do that. It's time to take the gospel to the enemy side. And so that's what I want you to think about today. Don't compare yourself to the people in the Bible that are the Bible heroes. That's not what God always looks for. But he does count on you to live a life of faith. And it may be a simple life of faith where you are the shining light to the people around you. That's all he's asking. That's all he needs from you, is for you to shine your light. And that's what he asks of you. So it may be all you can do, but it's something you can do. You may not be able to travel to different countries and take the gospel on mission trips, but if you could just reach your coworker, your next door neighbor, or that family member, that's what God is asking you to do. So as we take this morning, we'll have an invitation song, and you've got an opportunity to reflect on your life. If you need some strength to go out and take the gospel, we're here to pray for you. We're here to help you. Or if you're ready to take that first step and become a Christian warrior, if you've been thinking about it and you've decided that this is the kind of life of faith you'd like to lead, you've got an opportunity to do that. You can come forward. You can confess your faith and you can be baptized into Jesus Christ for the remission of your sins. So whatever your need is, we encourage you to come forward as we stand and sing.